You know, there's been a lot of home runs. Okay? It's increased pretty steadily over the last few years, although it's down a little bit this year. And MLB, there's been a lot of conspiracy theories over the last few years. The ball is juiced. Somehow the ball is altered in such a way. There's been other explanations. And MLB decided last summer, just about a year ago, it was actually in late July, that they really wanted to try to understand this issue. So they contacted me and proposed, you know, how would you like to chair a committee that would, a committee of smart people, and these are all smart people, except for me, and to look into this. And so I said, twist my arm, you know. So this for me is, you know, a perfect match for the things that both interest me and, you know, I have some expertise on. So we put together a really nice committee. Here are the names. And I want to point out a couple of people that you may know already. Jim Albert is very well known in baseball analytics. He's written lots of books. Curveball, I think, was one of his first books, sort of about simulation games and statistics. He's a professor of statistics at Bowling Green State College or State University in Ohio. And more recently, he's written the book called something that, like, baseball analytics using R. R is a software. He co-wrote it with Max, who's Italian and works for the Indians. And Dan Brooks is probably well known to a lot of you. He has the website brooksbaseball.net, which tabulates all the PitchFX and now TrackMan data on pitch information. Okay. And one person you probably don't know is Lloyd Smith, who is absolutely crucial to this whole thing. He's a mechanical engineering professor at Washington State University. His laboratory, he invented and runs the Sports Science Laboratory. It's a very, very nice facility. Every imaginable technological toy he has. And all of the laboratory experiments that we did as part of our study were done in his lab, supervised by him. I wanted to point out quickly, if you want to, well, let's see. How do I use this mouse? Yikes.
You got it. Whatever you did work.
Oh, all right. No, that's not what I wanted to do, though. But all right, I wanted to go to my website. If you go to this website, you will find a link to the actual reports. And so let me just tell you about the process. We started late last summer. The committee, we had an organizational committee meeting in New York. We all got to know each other. Most of us didn't know each other ahead of time. There were a bunch of statistics professors in there and everything. Let's see, what I need to do really here is get the start. How do I go into presentation mode? Oh, maybe, no, that's not it. Oh, there's the mouse. All right. So, this one right here. If you can find it. Well, it's okay. All right, good. Anyway, we had an organizational meeting in New York, and then we sort of got our marching orders. We focused in on, we divided up into subcommittees and decided what we wanted to do. We had a sort of a self-imposed limit that we wanted to get a report written by the end of the calendar year 2017, which we did, but then there was some follow-up work, and then the bottom line is the report got rewritten, or not rewritten so much as reorganized, and just a bunch of times, and finally the final report is dated April 17th. It was released publicly about 3 or 3.5 weeks ago. Okay. Okay. So I do want to say something though. First of all, I want to emphasize again. It was, for me, I was chairing the committee. You know, my job was, a lot of it was simply organizational. But so there were a lot of really good people working on this. They took the whole thing very seriously. We really, really had to work very hard. Those last 2 months of November and December, we were really working hard because we had this self-imposed deadline that we were trying to meet. And by the way, I'll get to this in a second. I want to say though that the MLB provided for us access to whatever resource we wanted. So we had access to all of the StatCast data, which is much more than what is publicly available. We have data on actual trajectories of fly balls, of pitch balls, and we actually use that data. So they gave us a total free hand. Whatever you want, we'll provide. And we asked for a lot, we got a lot. But let me just emphasize, because I'm sure there are still some conspiracy theorists out there, everything that we organized ourselves. All of the conclusions that we reached, the recommendations that we made, all of the analysis was totally our own without any interference whatsoever from MLB. So it really, really is an independent study. Okay, so now let me go on. This is what I wanted to say. Included in our study was a visit to Costa Rica, where Rawlings manufactures the baseballs that are used in Major League Baseball games. It's the only place that baseballs for Major League games are made. And that was a whirlwind visit. Long one-day solid visit. We saw every aspect of the construction of a baseball. It was very, very educational. We learned a lot by doing that. Okay, let me go on. Let's see, which button do I hit? Maybe I hit this. How about that? Okay, just by way of getting started here, this is home run rates. This is home runs per batted ball. 2012, 13, 14 was a low point, and then it started to rise. And there you go. And this is the most ever, and that's the second most ever, and that's probably the third most ever in Major League Baseball. And this is what we were trying to explain. Now, we were mostly focusing on the increase that began in 2000. This is 2015 pre-All-Star game. And this is post All-Star game, because that's sort of when the increase began. That's when people started noticing that the increase began. And then 2016, it went up higher, and 2017, it went up even higher. Okay. All right. So now I'm gonna go through this very, very rapidly, and then I'm just gonna just open this up for questions. Okay, so there were three basic categories of reasons for the home run surge that we looked at. Okay, and it really comes down to really three very, very simple things. Okay, so to hit a home run, what has to happen? You have to put the ball in play, but we're looking at home runs per ball in play, so we're normalizing that to that anyway. You have to hit it hard. Okay, you have to hit it at some reasonable range of launch angles, which is 20 to 35 degrees, 15 to 40 degrees. 10 degrees is not going to do it. Okay, so it's got to be 15 to 40 degrees covers about 98% of every home run. So you got to hit it at a reasonable launch angle, and you got to hit it hard. That was the first thing I said. And it carries through the air, and it's got to travel a long distance. So those are that's it. I mean, that's what you need to study. Okay, so hypothesis number one, batters are hitting the ball harder. Now, why might they hit the ball harder? They could be swinging harder, as Eric said. They're trying to hit more home runs by swinging the bat faster. Or the ball could be juiced. Or what does juiced mean? So there's the property of the ball which has I talked about this in my humidor talk, the coefficient of restitution, the bounciness of the ball. And that's a heavily regulated quantity in Major League Baseball. They do really a lot of testing to be sure that that doesn't change within some reasonable bounds. And so that's one of the things we looked at. Is the ball juiced? But we looked at this more generically. We explicitly studied whether the ball was juiced, both by looking at StatCast data. Are the exit velocities higher? That would be an indication. That's what we're trying to find out here. But we could also do the experiments in the laboratory. Okay? And we concluded the following. Oh, sorry. I'll tell you what we concluded. Let me go through the second reason for a second. One is the ball is hit at more optimal launch angles. So this goes under the name launch angle revolution, that batters are trying to hit more home runs by adjusting their swing so they get launch angles that are more optimal for hitting home runs. That's the second thing. And the third thing, the ball is carrying better, reduced air drag, which could come due to atmospheric effects such as temperature, wind, okay? Or it could be some property of the baseball that makes it carry better for a given exit velocity and launch angle. Okay, so those are the three basic categories of things that we looked at, and what did we conclude? It's not this. It's not this. It's this. All right? In a nutshell, that's what we learned. Now, let me just expound on this a little bit, and then I think this is actually my last slide. The ball, you certainly can find individual players for which the ball is being hit harder or at a more optimal launch angle. But looking globally across MLB, you can't explain the home run increase with that, with those hypotheses. So it really isn't this at all. The ball is not juiced in the sense that coefficient of restitution is higher. And as I said, there are some classic examples like J.D. Martinez, who went on a tear beginning last year when he adjusted his launch angle. So he was hitting more home runs because of that. But again, if you look globally, you don't find that. And the ball really is carrying better. So let me just expound on that just a little bit, and then I'll turn it over to questions. You see that by looking at pitched baseballs. You look at how much speed the ball loses between release and home plate. That's a direct measure of how much air drag there is. We see it there. You look at batted balls. So the one little game you can play is, all right, suppose a ball is hit at a given exit velocity and launch angle. Does it travel farther in 2017 than in 2016? It's a question we could answer. Answer, yes. Okay? And we did more than just look at the distance. We actually had real trajectory data. And we worried a lot about unknown atmospheric conditions. So what did we do there? We looked at trajectory data for covered stadiums, and we made especially good use of Tropicana Field, which is a 100% covered. Say again?
Maybe good use of Tropicana Field, that's right,
this is the only thing Tropicana Field is useful for, okay? Except if you want to see a Red Sox game, you know, when they're sold out in Boston. Or Yankee game, I think is the same. But yes, Tropicana Field turned out to be very, very beneficial. So we actually determined, and the other thing that we could do is we could do laboratory measurements of the drag, the air drag on a baseball. And all those things showed that, yes, the drag has been sort of progressively getting smaller by a little bit. It's not a lot. Smaller in 2016 than in 2015, smaller in 2017 than in 2016. And it's all consistent. All those different ways we have to measure that are consistent. And, moreover, you can take that information about the air drag, turn your physics crank, and that's where I come in, and then show that it's consistent with the increase in home runs that we actually see. So it really, really pulls together very, very nicely. So that's the good news. Okay. It's not atmospheric effects. We rule that out. Well, except we can't really, we rule that out primarily by using Tropicana Field. Okay. I guess I do have another slide. So once we determine that that was the case, then we ask, all right, so here are two sets of baseballs. Here's a dozen baseballs that have higher than average drag, air drag. Okay, it doesn't carry as far. Here's another dozen baseballs that has lower than typical drag. And you look at them, and you ask yourselves, what's different about these? You touch them, you feel them, you taste them. You know, you do anything you can possibly do. So we actually did some scientific things, okay? We measured their size. You know, All other things equal, the bigger a ball is, the more air drag there's going to be. You know, the more air molecules that has to push out of the way. It's not the size. We looked at the weight. It's not the weight. We looked at the seam height. So there is a well-known effect. It's not well-known to, I mean, it's well, it's well-known to people who know it, I guess, that seam height actually can affect the drag. In fact, it was exactly that. Going from a raised seam baseball to a flat seam baseball is what the NCAA did a couple of years ago in order to get more home runs. They were looking for more home runs. Okay. Anyway, we looked at seam height. It's not that. We looked at the texture of the leather, and it's a little hard to quantify exactly what that means. But, you know, smooth versus rough, and you could see no difference in the texture of the leather. I mean, not only you can't see it, you could actually do some objective experiments by measuring the profile with a laser, and we don't see any effect. And then we started looking at more exotic things. And the more exotic, so I mean, these are all the obvious things, the ones up here. And there's nothing obvious that we could find. Okay, so we started looking at the unobvious things, like how well the pill, which is the centermost part of the ball, is centered in the ball. See, now, what happens when the ball is spinning, if it's a little bit off center, when it spins, as it always does when it's traveling, you know, when it's hit, you know, in a typical home run trajectory, it'll wobble. It'll be a little wobble, and that wobble could affect the air drag. We tried looking at that, and we couldn't convince ourselves that that was an effect at all. We couldn't convince ourselves that the ball was, you know, not centered properly, nor could we convince ourselves that it would make a huge difference anyway. But, you know, we didn't have we only had somewhat crude tools for doing that. So we're still looking into that a little further to see if that's it. Another thing that can happen is you take an object and you spin it at really high spin rate, it can actually deform. The sphere could become more oblong, like football shaped. I mean, depending on how rigid the ball is. You know, a ball feels pretty rigid, but you know, we're looking for small effects, and that will affect the air drag. And we looked for that, and we couldn't find that. The thickness of the thread, this is something that actually just came up recently because somebody else, Meredith Wills, okay, wrote an article for The Athletic a couple of weeks ago in which she's a knitter, so she takes balls apart and, you know, she's interested in the yarn. Anyway, almost as an afterthought, at least that's the way she characterized it to me, she measured the thickness of the thread and found that the thread is thicker or thinner now. I don't even remember. I think it's thicker in 2017 than in 2014. She didn't have any... She was looking at a small sample of baseballs that she managed to cobble together. Our committee will probably go back to work and look at this a little carefully. We actually never looked at that thing. So we don't know whether she has sort of fallen into the small sample size trap where, you know, with small sample size you might just be seeing some fluctuation. So it could be that the mean value thickness hasn't really changed, but you're just looking at variation of a sample. And that's possible. Anyway, but we have the tools to actually go back and look at it. But not only do we not know that there's really an effect there, we don't know whether even that matters as far as the air drag is concerned. So for a physicist like myself, in a way it's sort of an unsatisfying result that we found. We found out, you know, that it is the air drag, but we have not succeeded in finding what specific property of the ball has actually changed in a way that would change the air drag. So it's unfortunately, it's still a work in progress. But whatever is happening, it is for sure, must be very, very subtle, or else we would have figured it out by now. And the other thing to mention is that air drag is not something that MLB or Rawlings, who manufactures the ball, ever worried about before. They don't do any testing on air drag. No one ever thought to do it before. But they will. So that one of our recommendations of our committee is that they develop techniques to do that. And actually, in another month, we're going to be visiting the USGA, the United States Golf Association facility in northern New Jersey, where they had tremendous facilities for doing such measurements on golf balls. So we're going to see we're going to pick their brain to see what we can learn from them. Okay, and so that's where we are. Questions? Eric.
I take it there was no known change in the manufacturer in the middle of 2015?
There were, so we, there were some minor changes in things, but none of the, and we, so we got a list of every single change that was made starting with in 2014. And there were minor upgrades of machinery and things like that. No changes in things like suppliers of wool or suppliers of leather. You know, leather, you know, baseball is made mostly of organic materials, right? You know, maybe the cows are being fed differently or something. Who knows? Yes. Yes. Ah, good question. Yes, so that's one of the things that MLB provided for us. So there are two sets of old balls that we have. So MLB routinely supplies 24 dozen baseballs each year to the laboratory at University of Massachusetts at Lowell for just routine testing. So it's 8 dozen 3 times a season. And they measure the COR of the ball, they measure, you know, all the usual things, except they don't measure drag, since, no one ever thought to. And roughly half of those balls, they test in some manner or other, they dissect them in a way that we couldn't use, but the other half were available. So half the balls were new baseballs that we got from there for years, all the way back to, I think, 2010. The second set of baseballs were actually game-used baseballs. They're so-called authentication balls that are collected up by MLB, you know, with some record of what game it was in, and then they're sold as souvenirs. So we got a big collection of used baseballs. Now, they're used, but you know, a baseball is not used very much anymore, right? It's, you hit it once and it's thrown out of the game pretty much. So that it's, you can tell that it's used because you can tell that it's been rubbed down with mud. The other ones from UMass Lowell were perfectly new balls. Yes?
So you said that there are many different factors that aren't in the cell significant, like, for example, size of his balls. Did you guys see maybe a combination of differences that weren't significant in results? Let's say people's balls had slightly significant size, just for the extra slightly different seed height, that weren't significant in results that were not.
Yeah, so let me repeat the question. So I listed a number of things that we looked at that didn't matter individually, but we also looked at the stacking them up to see whether a small effect here and a small effect here and a small effect here might add up to be something. Yes, we looked into that and it doesn't. Yeah. Over here. Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you ask that question? Someone asked me that question in my humidor talk, yes, and I said, come here and I'll talk about it. Unfortunately, I don't have much to say about it. Mud does definitely affect the drag, okay? And you can see that because we've got these two sets of baseballs. One of them have been mudded and one set haven't been, and you can see there's a little difference in drag. But the really relevant question is how uniform is when the ball is mudded up, how is that regulated, okay? And the answer is we really don't know. And in fact, the answer is nobody knows, okay? Nobody really knows. So that it could possibly be that what we're seeing is somehow a change in that procedure. So one of our recommendations, since that's a big unknown, one of our recommendations that MLB is seriously looking into is to do what the Japanese do. The Japanese don't mud the ball. You mud the ball to produce a better surface for the pitcher to grip. I think that's the principal reason. And so you need something like a tacky surface. What they're doing in Japan is treating the leather so that you've got this little slightly tacky surface, which obviates the need for actually mudding it. It's my understanding that MLB actually tried this out this past year during spring training, and they're going to decide whether they're going to change the process so that they do that from now on. Yeah, Richard.
So how does, if the construction ball is the same, let's assume for a second something, how does the ball get from Costa Rica over to the parks? Could it be something like where everything is stored after it's inspected? I mean,
Yeah.
So all the face plugs go to like a central warehouse that will be inspected, then it goes somewhere else, and then it's distributed.
Yeah, so how do the baseballs get from Costa Rica to the teams? And so there's even more to this, which I'll get to also. They're shipped to Rawlings, and Rawlings has a big distribution center, a completely climate-controlled distribution center. So it's like storing it in a big humidor. I don't know the exact storage conditions, but they're fixed. And then teams order baseballs throughout the year. They don't. One of the things we learned, I didn't know this ahead of time, was that teams don't just get a shipment of baseballs and that's good for the whole season. They're ordering baseballs, you know, regularly, maybe once a month or something like that. But the real question is, what are the teams doing to the baseball? What are the different clubs doing? And that's another thing that is up until now has been pretty much unknown. The clubs themselves probably couldn't tell you exactly how they're doing it, but now they're required to store the balls in an environment that can be monitored. It's whatever environment they want, but it has to be monitored and reported to MLB, and MLB will use that information to decide whether they want to require that the clubs store their balls in a particular environment like they're doing now at Chase Field and Coors. Let's go over here.
Yeah, so I know Coach Parker, a number of times I've seen interviews for the media about current pitchers, and I consistently recall seeing them commenting about the scene that you have talked about. Yeah. As this is a work in progress, crazy idea. What about getting some retired pitchers and have them just, because they don't have money on the line now, and just because a professional pitcher who has tens of thousands of pitches, he's going to have a feel the average person wouldn't. And what if they were in separate rooms, they did whatever they wanted, but if the committee finally had a common theory,
yeah, we actually thought of that, and we actually started doing that a little bit, but then it logistically got to be too difficult. What we wanted to do was the bucket of balls test, okay? You have a bucket of balls where somehow they were unknown to the pitcher. There were balls from different years, and we would ask them, pick up the ball, tell us what are these balls the same? Are they different? What's different about them? You know, totally blind test. So that's one of the things that we really had on our wish list of things to do. But and we sort of started to do it, but it was logistically not so easy. But your idea is a good idea. You often see in the course of a game a pitcher gets a new ball and he throws it back and wants another one. He feels something about that ball that doesn't quite feel right to him. And we talked to some pitchers. Actually, last summer when we had our meeting in New York, we went to Citi Field and we saw the Mets against the Diamondbacks, and we talked to both some players on both teams to find out, to try to learn about these kinds of things. But we really didn't learn much. And I have to say, I wonder. They feel things differently than we do, right? They're doing this for a living, on the other hand, we've heard one of the things that we've heard actually with regard to the thickness of the thread. One of the things that Meredith was trying to do was correlate that with the infestation, if you will, of blisters that pitchers have been getting in the last year or so. So the idea being that maybe the thickness of the thicker thread is causing blisters.
How would thicker thread reduce thread? Would the thicker thread actually without changing the sequence?
Well, before she published her article, she contacted me and she said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, I can conceive that changing the thickness of the thread could change the drag, but I can't tell you whether it's going to increase the drag or decrease the drag. It's just conceivable to me that it could have some effect. The air is flowing over the seams, so it's got to have some effect. But I can't predict whether the drag would go up or go down with a thicker seam." And I think she even wrote that in her article. Yeah.
So other things being held equal, and chiefly exit velocity and launch angle, would it make a difference what type of pitch thrown and what spin rate comes in at in terms of how far out it goes?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So what we've kept equal is exit velocity and launch angle and actually spray angle also. But I didn't mention spin. And we did look at spin, but we didn't look at it in a really granular way. What we do know is that the spin, we know from laboratory experiments that have been done that the spin of a batted ball doesn't depend very much at all on the spin of the pitch ball. So that's another area that I think if one wanted to continue doing follow-up work is to look at spin a little bit more granularly than we did. My gut feeling is that doesn't explain things. So it actually is sort of interesting. I mean, the spin of a batted ball matters for distance, but maybe not quite as much as most people think. Because what happens is, if you hit a ball, say, at a 30-degree launch angle, you know, something optimum for hitting a home run, it has backspin on it. That backspin increases the distance relative to what you'd have if it didn't have any spin on it, because there's lift from the backspin. However, once you have up to say a couple thousand RPM of backspin, which is pretty, you know, for a pitcher that would be a good amount of backspin, then the other thing that happens is the air drag actually increases with spin. So that, you know, between 2,000 and 3,500 RPM, we've actually done experiments, you see that you change the spin in that range and the distance doesn't change. You know, you get these canceling effects. The increased lift is canceled by the increased drag. So it's probably not a big effect.
So it wouldn't be possible then that the difference could be explained by a different
picture? I wouldn't say it's not possible. I would say it's not likely.
So, running with that, it also seems unlikely even given that more backspin might cause it more carry. It also seems to be unlikely that there would be an overall improvement.
Yeah, that's...
There isn't one in negative velocity or launch.
Right. Well, I think Chuck's question, though, was more to do with the pitch selection, and if they're throwing more curveballs or something, and somehow that affects the spin. Or, you know,
we would have seen that people would have thought about the pitch effects.
Okay, yes.
What about the bat? A couple of years ago, everything was, we had all these bats breaking like crazy.
Yeah.
We don't seem to see that as much anymore, and we haven't heard you say that, the second half of the action of the ball is getting hit by the bat.
Right. So we didn't look carefully at bats, mostly because we really don't think that could possibly change things. So what's the bat going to do? The bat is going to change your exit velocity. Maybe it'll change your launch angle. Maybe it'll change the spin. It's not going to affect the carry of the ball. And besides the bat, if batters are, if it were true that batters were sort of on the average using heavier bats, a little bit heavier bats, then you could actually hit the ball. Most major leaguers will actually end up hitting the ball harder with a heavier bat, but they'll hit it less often. And you probably would end up with more home runs, but also more strikeouts, which of course you see, but we have ruled out exit velocity as being the cause. So it almost surely is not the bats. But by the way, just to say about the breakage, those are largely maple bats, and MLB instituted some rules a few years ago, I don't remember exactly when it was, has to do with the grain and the grain not being straight, and so they have these slope of grain rules now, which actually has reduced the breakage considerably. You know, if you look, you can spot this on many major league hitters are using maple bats, at least half. And there's a little thing on the handle of the bat. You can see this on TV. You can't really see what it is, but you see something's there, some little shiny thing. Not a little shiny thing has something to do with some measurement of the slope of the grain. It's some little arrow pointing, showing how the grain is turning. In principle, the umpire can inspect that and throw the bat out if it doesn't follow the rules. Yeah, back.
Spin as far as part of the grain, because of deformation. But a big form of deformation is just from being struck by the bat. How long does it take for the ball to stop being deformed and then go back to normal size? Is that like by the time you use the infield on a home run?
Oh, no, no. It happens much before that. But yeah, you could look at high-speed video. And you can see it probably happens over 5 feet or less. But it's an interesting thing because one of the peculiar things, if you're looking at trajectory information, you actually see something funny going on, you know, right after contact. And it probably has to do with the fact that that ball is deformed a little bit. But it really straightens itself out pretty quickly after that.
Does the attention
drag you the first 5 feet? No, the first 5 feet. You know, a ball, you know, my rule of thumb is that a ball is losing about 1% of its speed every 5 feet. So it's 1%. Well,
the first 5 feet just seems like to be a crucial time. You're going to lose an extra percent. But that would have more effect in the first 5 feet than in the last 300.
Well, certainly the early part of the flight matters more than the late, but the first 5 feet is a little too. You know, it matters, but only in a cumulative sense. I mean, you know, what happens is a baseball trajectory, you know, if it were physics 101, it would be a parabola, but it's not. It covers more territory on the way up than it does on the way down because it's lost so much forward speed by the time it got at its highest point. So that, you know, pretty much the early part definitely matters more, but the first 5 feet is a little too...
That's
too small. Okay, anyway. In the blue shirt there, yeah.
You mentioned Japanese baseball and Japanese baseball. We see the same home run trends over the last couple of years in Japanese and maybe Korean baseball. And have they done any analysis like this on Japanese?
Now, we certainly never looked at that. But there was this curious thing that happened in Japanese baseball 3 or 4 years ago where the ball was juiced. I don't remember if it was, somebody lost a job over this, okay? He probably had to commit suicide or something, I don't know. But the ball really was juiced. The home runs went up and they did measurements and discovered that, yeah, the coefficient of restitution was elevated. But we didn't worry about any of that in our studies.
Follow up to the question about that. Passive breaking device, and your metric is home runs per contact. What would happen if you reanalyze the last few years' data excluding bat breakage? Could it be that with fewer bats breaking, you just have a greater possibility of hitting a home run?
No, I don't. We didn't do such an analysis, but again, my gut instinct is that when the bat breaks, it actually doesn't affect the batted ball that much, believe it or not. Unless the bat is breaking because the impact was on, you know, well off the sweet spot of the bat, in which case you're not going to get a home run anyway because it's going to be a low exit velocity. But usually the bat breaks because it's already been compromised, you know, through earlier impacts, and it's just sort of weakened to the point where it breaks.
There's just not enough broken bats to really create an effective
spot. Well, there's for sure that's the case, but I was even saying something stronger than that, that when a bat breaks, you could get a broken bat home run. I mean, so what happens is the times that I've looked at broken bats when the ball is well hit, if you look at high-speed video, you see that the bat actually breaks after the ball has already left the bat. Let me get him back here. Yeah. No, we haven't done that study, but boy, I tell you, they throw out the, you know, any, okay, so let me back up. I talked about, well, it's not up there now, smoothness of the surface, texture of the leather, scuff, if the ball is scuffed, that will affect the drag. But a scuff baseball just virtually never has a chance to get, you know, get hit because they throw the ball out before that. I've been asked that question. I mean, some people have asked, sent me emails asking, are we seeing better, because balls are thrown out more often now than they used to be, could that explain it? But it really can't, because they've really been, what they're doing now with throwing balls out, they've been doing that for a decade at least, right? It's been a long time. Yeah, let me.
That was actually along the lines of what I was going to ask. With pace of play and decreasing the time between pitches, is it possible pitchers that have less of an opportunity to scuff or put stuff on the ball? I mean,
that's an interesting question.
You see that, and then people would spot that in the pitch effects game, and suddenly there was more breaking balls or. By the way,
Eric, it wasn't my intention to monopolize all of our time, let me give him one chance and then. These three things we're going to test. These two we've already tested a little bit, but we have to build better instrumentation to do it better. And in the case of the centering of the pill, we're actually having Rawlings build us some baseballs in which the pill is purposely made offset. There's an old adage in experimental physics: if you can't make a situation better, try making it worse. Just so you can see the effect. So we're going to try to make the effect bigger to see whether we see an effect. Okay. So these three things are things that we are going to continue to sort of pound down on. And then, you know, we've been all busy doing other things in the last few weeks, but at some point we'll get together and brainstorm about other things, probably after we visit this USGA facility. No, I mean, the drag on a baseball is largely a surface effect. It's almost totally insensitive to what's inside, because the air is flowing over the surface. So it's definitely sensitive to the surface properties of the ball.
It could be
cold. No, we looked at temperature. Well, it's there, back there somewhere. Okay.
Yeah, anyway. Thank you so much.